Welcome to this week's edition of Techonomics. Host Jason Middleton digs into possible usage of virtual reality that could lead to more social justice, giving VR crime scenes to juries and criminal court cases. Then it's all about the economy. A new study from Bankrate.com highlights what the government can do to boost this slow growth recovery from the Great Recession. And Yelp is launching a new feature that may help you get seated quicker at that hot restaurant near you. Finally, the Bay Area has booms and busts, but there's one market that seems to stay constantly overheated. Real estate. Techonomics with Jason Middleton starts now.
Welcome to this week's Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton, and we're going to start this week with virtual reality. And why? Well, because it's coming to us faster than anyone really anticipated. Of course, it's been on the horizon for a while. Facebook did buy Oculus for big bucks a couple of years ago. And Samsung, Sony, HTC, and Google are furiously pouring research and development funds into virtual and augmented realities. Consumer-level virtual reality is still a pricey option. Around $500 is a common price point for a headset right now. That said, the same $500 price point could lead to truer justice and rulings from the world's judicial system.
Move in. Stop. Pull out track right. Stop. Center and pull back. Stop. Track 45 right. Stop. Center and stop. Enhance 34 to 36.
If you recognize that clip, you probably, like me, watch a little bit too much Blade Runner a little bit too often. Let me flesh this out. Let's think about juries. Usually they sit in a box in a courtroom. If they have to venture out, it's usually a major deal to visit a crime scene, usually involving media and bystanding gawkers. What if virtual reality machines could bring the crime scene to the courtroom? And jurors could do a virtual walkthrough as attorneys presented their cases. Yeah, that's on tap right now for a $500 buy-in. Here's more with a former barrister, forensic researcher, and newly minted inventor and entrepreneur.
My name is Mehzab Chowdhury, and I'm doing a PhD in forensic science and criminal investigations at Durham University in the United Kingdom.
And it seems like what we found here is a very cool inflection point, if you will, when you look at it from the tech angle. But if you look at it from the justice angle, it can be very conducive to better delivery of justice in our systems. And I'm talking about virtual reality when it comes to crime scenes. And I'm interested in what your take is on this. And we'll get into your hardware that you've developed a little bit later. But right now, let's get 30,000 foot view. How does VR come into the courtroom?
VR in the courtroom, it's something that has been talked about for a bit, but because the logistics of it is a little difficult to pull off because, A, it's expensive, B, the technology up till now has been very complicated. So it's been hard to actually introduce it into the court, but with improving technology, with ease of use coming into it, we're, I think, in a position where in about a year we can actually start really thinking about this in terms of implementing it in the court, because before we bring it into the court, the crime scene investigators have to actually start using it in the field, and that would require police departments to come forward, and I'm really, really happy to say that they've actually come forward. A few of them have gotten in touch with me in the first 3 days of the initial article coming out.
Wow. That's a great response. Let's talk about, for centuries, eyewitness accounts have been used in courts as well. Now, does virtual reality help move us away from the non-quantifiable and get us into a more fact-based decision-making process?
Yeah, one of the problems with witnesses is, and speaking from my experience as a criminal barrister, I'm qualified in the United Kingdom. I've worked in the justice system, and I've seen that eyewitnesses are incredibly unreliable because not because they have a sort of, they're willingly doing this or they're manipulating the truth, because that happens sometimes, but more often than not, it's because the passage of time that really changes our memory, it makes things a lot more fuzzy. So if you can capture a crime scene the way it was on the day that the first investigators walked into the scene, it not only helps the justice system, but it can also assist investigators to go back and sort of step into that crime scene even when physically they can't do that, because what we're looking at is from the moment a crime scene is processed to an actual trial happening or VR being used in court, it might be several years. It might be 2, 3, 4 years before a crime scene investigator or a forensic scientist might be brought into the court to testify or to recreate a crime scene using photos or sketches, which is traditionally how they do it. So by then, physically, the crime scene has changed totally, because even if you leave the house without anyone touching it, there will be dust, there will be deterioration of physical aspects there, regardless of what you do, because that's what happens in nature. And what we can do is we can preserve every detail of a crime scene if we can capture it from, say, more than the traditional 170 degrees that we usually do at crime scenes at the moment.
Yeah, you mentioned photos and sketches, which can kind of even unintentionally introduce subjective or subjectivity, depending on who's drawing or taking the pictures. And you also mentioned towards the top of the interview, police departments interested very quickly after you published your essay about what you've been developing. So what are the police departments interested in, and how did you get to the point where you've been able to invent some hardware?
The police are really interested in using this form of documentation for crime scenes, because not only does it assist them in investigations, but it also adds credibility for their crime scene departments. Because usually what would happen is your crime scene investigators will walk into a crime scene. They will usually measure the relative distance between evidence. If there's a body, if there's an article of clothing or some kind of a weapon, they would basically measure the distance between them, the room itself. And then sometimes, in most cases actually, they will use a grid paper. They'll draw it by hand and put the measurements in. And later on, they would go back to the crime lab and they'd recreate the crime scene in 3D software, which is not really reality. It is just merely an approximation of reality, which brings, as you said, a lot of subjectivity, because these crime scene recreations are seldom just recreations. They will usually have some form of subjectivity in terms of how they think events might have unfolded. So the recreations would have, say, a 3D figure firing a gun or trying to get into a window, and that's how they would show it. So it would be either a prosecution 3D recreation or a defense 3D recreation. And then you have these warring ideas, and the jury is tasked with believing whichever of the stories are actually more likely. So that's what we're actually trying to avoid, because what you want to give the jury is a tour of the crime scene where they can look at whatever they want. They can focus on whichever article or the body or whatever's on or around them, and they can actually figure out what might have happened. Because with 2D pictures, when you do take pictures, you are totally reliant on the photographer. Whatever he or she focuses on is what you have to see. But with this, you can actually look at the crime scene and sometimes figure out things which may not be representative of what was said in court by the two sides.
I see. We're speaking with Mezeb Chowdhury. Did I say that correctly, Mezeb?
Yeah, absolutely. You got it right.
We're speaking with Mezeb Chowdhury, a PhD researcher in forensic science and criminal investigations at Durham University in the UK. When we take, say, juries out into public and take them to physical crime scenes, it kind of becomes a media display, especially in high-profile cases, of course. There's security and other things, too. But on the other hand, isn't virtual reality very expensive? I mean, we've been hearing about it, and we know it's coming. But right now, it seems like, the early adopters are the only ones who can afford it right now. How are you going to be able to apply that kind of situation economically to such a solution judicially?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, part of the reason why I started working on this is because of the price point. Because currently, if you want to do mainstream VR, you need to either buy a system called GoPro Omni, which is basically six GoPro cameras on a rig, and that costs $5,000.
Yeah.
So it is incredibly expensive. The headsets are incredibly expensive. So I wanted a system where you could bring the cost down maybe 10% of that, and you could achieve the same result. So in terms of hardware, what I really wanted to do was look at lenses which could capture 170 degrees at least.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have one facing forward, one facing back. If you stitch them together, you have a field of view of 340 degrees. If you stitch it right, you can almost get rid of the blind spot on the two sides. And you could achieve that with relatively cheap hardware. The price point that I spoke to manufacturers who could actually bring this forward was the camera itself would cost less than $200. So you could achieve that
mm-hmm.
with that kind of money, and it would be one camera rather than six. So that was really important. And do you need expensive headsets? That was the second question that I've been asked a lot. You don't. You could use a Google Cardboard, which costs $10.
Right.
You could put that in because it doesn't require massive amounts of processing power. It doesn't require incredibly powerful computers to render 3D graphics because it's not graphics. It is photos and videos which have been captured from 360 degrees. So potentially you could take a tour of the crime scene. You could sit down and the rover takes you through each of the rooms and you could stop it at any point and you could look around as if you were actually there. Or even photographs are immersive enough that you could actually feel like you're at the crime scene. So you could look around, look forward, and it requires no render times, no processing power. So we tested it on a $50 smartphone and one of the cheapest ones out there. And the results were just as it would be on one of the latest ones, which are worth $600.
Wow. Well, that's great because I'm just thinking, like, my 7-year-old uses our Google Cardboard to look at Viewmasters of the Acropolis, and now she can solve crimes using your technology. We're going to have images, and we have a YouTube video as well demonstrating what Mr. Chaudhry has been developing. We're going to have that on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Mr. Chaudhry, I have one last question for you. Now, you're in development right now on what I'm looking at, and it looks very viable. Of course, drones are coming down the pike a little bit. Is there an adaptable phase maybe where drones could be used with your technology?
Oh, absolutely. I think the camera system can be placed on any mountable vehicle, but I really think that drones might not be the best way to go in terms of crime scenes because in terms of quadcopters and things like that, they have propellers which might blow away evidence or they might be a little difficult to maneuver indoors. If it is outdoors, it's a lot easier. So that's why we really, really wanted to focus on a system we can actually go through physically at a crime scene and be autonomous enough to avoid contaminating evidence because you can't have a rover that drives over blood or hits an article of evidence or a body. So it has been meticulously designed in a way that it does not disturb the crime scene. So hopefully the right kind of attention is there and we can move this forward.
So you have just enough tech, don't need too much more tech right now. You've got what you need.
Well, you can never say you have enough development. The problem is that I built this in my garage. So,
good.
Yeah, so it's one of those stories where you have a guy sitting in a garage building something and you always need more investment, you need more research to make it better because you can never have enough megapixels in a camera or you can never settle for resolution because, you know, today it's FHD, tomorrow it can be 4K or even 8K.
Right.
So that requires investment and money. So that's something that the police departments will have to sort of coordinate and figure out how they want to move forward. But my vision for it is that it has to be cheap. It has to be less than $400. The entire system, not just the rover, the camera system, everything. And we'll even provide you with a Google Cardboard as well, so you don't need anything at all. So for $400, a VR system which can capture a crime scene from every angle, and in great detail, which can not only help the justice system, but also investigators to solve crimes better.
Well, more megapixels, that sounds like an inventor. More investment needed to move things forward. Now you're really cooking it with Silicon Valley gas. I'm talking with Mezeb Chaudhry. Mr. Chaudhry, great stuff. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Absolute pleasure talking to you.
That was Mezeb Chaudhry, a forensic science and criminal investigations researcher and PhD candidate at Durham University in the UK. For $500, crime scene investigators, CSIs, could get a robot, a camera, and some software. And Mr. Chaudhry's MabMAT robotic imaging system will throw in a set of Google Cardboard virtual reality, a $15 value. All in the name of better justice for the accused. Small price to pay, really. There are links at facebook.com/techonomicsradio if you want to know more about VR in the jury box. Coming up after this short break, we have a new economic survey that shows worker productivity is helping employers to open their wallets and reinvest in their own companies. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.